D-Mace Finnegan and Donick 102.5, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, and David Janes here with you on a Thursday afternoon. We hope you all are having a wonderful Thursday, a beautiful day.
Mine just got a lot better. Mets got the last out over in City
Field.
There we go. Took 2 out of 3 from the Padres.
Okay.
So still hanging in there. Still got a long way to go. I've been very nervous because the Mets have been in a free fall for 3 months. But
okay,
tracking for the wild card here if they can hang on.
It was all because of the presence of our friend, Teron Davenport.
Yes, he sparked him.
You sent us a video the other day of the SNY broadcast, and lo and behold, they were just doing a crowd shot at Citi Field. Big stadium. They just landed on Teron Davenport.
Yeah. 35,000 people there, and there's Teron.
Hey, they need that. That's the spark they got, Willie.
He is a partial season ticket holder.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
He has
a package of games.
Uh-huh.
That he is a loyal Mets fan.
Where are your package of games, Willie?
I'm not that loyal. Or I try to mooch off people when I go up there.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. Nothing at all. Nothing at all.
Yeah, he is dedicated.
Okay, as a Mets fan, because you've been in this, we don't know which Willie's going to walk through the door. You know, we don't know if it's the yes, Mets, Willie, or the, oh, my goodness, Willie. Dang it, Mets blew another one. Is it better to have that feeling, like that back and forth, that dichotomy between you two, or is it better to just not know you're out of it, period?
Yeah, the Mets are great character building because you can never get too high when the Mets are doing well because you always are worried in the back of your mind that they're going to do something to screw it up. So
you'd rather have
done their best. I try to stay even-keeled. But I'll just talk to me when they clinch. If they clinch, then I'll get very excited.
Okay, fair.
They just need more Teron Davenport.
That's what it is.
So Teron, if you're listening, my friend, get your ass to Citi Field. You have a actual job to do covering Tennessee Titans. So
yes,
do
it
that.
Was his day off.
Do that.
That's why he was up there. I believe it was the day that the Titans are basically off. So he jaunted up there.
But when you have a free moment, Teron, head back up to Queens for Willie.
Oh, we didn't hit the button on my word.
What word did you use?
I said dichotomy.
You did use dichotomy.
Oh, that was nice. That deserves a ding.
I had to make sure I had to look it up. I had to say, I know I used it, right? So, come on.
A division or contrast between two things that are or are represented as being opposed or entirely different.
Yeah, see? That's different.
We are going to raise SAT scores.
Ooh, I love
on
it.
This show.
I love it.
You know this is like a great after school activity. It's just getting out of school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get a vocab word here and there.
Yeah.
It just will absorb into your consciousness.
Turn on DVD.
If you're like a high school student.
Turn on DVD.
You can tell your parents you're taking an SAT prep score. After school.
There you go.
All I'm saying is if SAT... Wait, first of all, do kids around here take the SAT or the ACT?
See, in Michigan, it was ACT.
I took the SAT.
I didn't take the SAT.
Okay.
I grew up
and I took the SAT. I never took the ACT. Around here, most of the people that I know, including my two kids, took the ACT.
Okay, so if ACT scores spike in Nashville... You know why.
Yes. DVD.
We are taking full credit.
3 letters.
DVD.
You're damn right we are.
DVD, ACT, baby.
Damn 1, 2, 3. You and me.
Oh. Oh, boy. There we go.
All
and
right.
That is
man.
Why you listen to this show.
And we're off and running. All right. So let's start today's show by addressing a conversation that a majority of Titans fans seem to be having. And it's a conversation that you can't really ignore. And that conversation is about Brian Callahan's fitness for being a head coach in the NFL. And look, the record is what it is. Brian Callahan is 3-16 as a head coach in the NFL. His Titans teams have been outscored by 171 points over 19 games. By the way, I was shocked to find out that is not the worst point differential in the NFL over that span. The Browns are at minus 202, and the Panthers are at minus 214. So you got that going for you. The Titans offense in 19 games under Brian Callahan has averaged exactly, no decimal points, exactly 18 points per game. So I know all of you want there to be some sort of repercussion for what's been going on with the Tennessee Titans, not just through these first two games, but the previous 17 games under Brian Callahan. But here's the question I want us to discuss. Because although it seems that everybody wants to fire Brian Callahan, what would that accomplish right now? That's the question I have for all of you at 615-737-1025. Would it satiate your bloodlust? Yes, it would. And when teams perform poorly, fans want somebody to pay the price. And Brian Callahan has not helped this team win too many games. So Titans fans just want there to be something that happens to make it feel like their voices are being heard. And I've seen your texts. You've texted in all week and even last week, and I've seen them. Hey, if the Titans fire Brian Callahan, what do you think about Arthur Smith coming back and being the head coach of the Tennessee Titans? What about John Gruden? What about Mike McCarthy? I've seen all of those texts. I haven't addressed any of them, but I know it's a conversation y'all want to have. So this is what we're going to do first. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What would firing Brian Callahan now accomplish? What would it accomplish? I want to know.
And can I ask this? Like, are we really being in the real world when we get this? I want to know how real this topic is. There's always fringe. But I want to know from our listeners, like, is this a real thing? That you really want this? We're talking about this two games into the season. Do we not want to see a little bit more before we take a measured approach? I'm not saying that this isn't a coach on the hot seat. I think when you're 3-16, it's a logical discussion.
Yes.
It's a natural question. But from a practical standpoint, I think you've asked the question. What would you really be accomplishing if you're really addressing this? And are you really addressing this? Like, I just don't see how this would work. At the end of the year, let's have a sensible discussion about it. But pulling the plug in the middle of the season, even in the middle of the season, we're not even close to the middle of the season yet. That's crazy.
I would love to know.
That's not a practical thing.
I should have done this research. Shame on me. I would love to know how often a coach gets fired within the first 3-4 games of an NFL season. Now, I understand that Brian Callahan also had a full season last season, but you usually don't see coach firings this early in the season. It's still September, for God's sake. But I can't ignore the fact that Titans fans want to discuss this. I've heard Robbie and Rex Rowe discuss this. I've heard Chase and Big Joe discuss this. I know that it's being discussed. And the one thing that I don't want any of us to do, the three of us and all of you, is I do not want to stoop to lowest common denominator stuff.
Right. So what's so you mentioned some credible people. Let's take Robbie and Joe. What are they arguing that he should be fired?
They are not arguing.
Because he didn't know the rule of the one thing? Like what is the premise of saying it's time, we've made up our mind?
They are not arguing, because I do not want to put words in their mouths. Mm-hmm. And Robbie and Joe, if you're listening and I get this incorrect, please let me know. They had a discussion yesterday about, hey, if it doesn't work out with Callahan, is there anybody else out there to be excited about? They are not advocating for the firing of Brian Callahan, but they are talking around it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It does make sense, because you can't have the full blown conversation, because I know you're looking back on last season, but we all know this is a rebuild. So to have the conversation now, again, just like Blake Bedingfield was setting the table for potential trades.
Yes.
This is setting the table for a potential conversation that really needs to have 8 weeks into the season. So right now, yeah, they're talking around. It's like we're mingling now. We're mingling in the real, the main course, and everything hadn't started yet. We're just mingling now, setting up everything. So that's what's happening now. And listen, there's nothing wrong with it, but like you don't want to get bogged down in it and sort of miss what's going on in front of you. Yahoo Sports did a article this year on the seven NFL coaches who could be fired before the end of the season. And for various reasons, and they had their reasons were a mixture of underperformance, failing to break through with conference ceiling, and a general feeling of needing an upgrade as left several coaches entering their season without safety. And on that list, I scrolled through it, and none of them were Brian Callahan. I'm not saying that the Yahoo Sports is an end-all, be-all, but they got their information from somebody or somewhere. They're getting the buzz on certain coaches, and we understand why certain coaches, like they have Mike Tomlin on here. We understand why Mike Tomlin would sort of be on high because he can't win a game in the playoffs. That's not the Steeler way. I can see why Zach Taylor is on the list because you've underperformed with an elite quarterback and elite talent around him. So you know Shane Steichen, the same thing. So you know why those guys are sort of on the list, and it's not necessarily because they're bad teams. Why did they choose to leave Brian Callahan? Is he in the other subset of individuals that on that next list that he thinks or they think will end up getting fired before the end of the season? Again, it's not the end all be all, but I'm just referencing an article that I read.
Let's go to Derek from Iowa on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Derek, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Thanks, guys. I just have a couple sticking points. Thinking back to last year, Adam, you brought up statistics for the NHL coach gets fired, the team gets a bump.
Yes.
Is there any correlation, you think, to the NFL? And that... then I also think of, you guys said, Will Levis needs 20 games for a sample size. We're about there with Coach Callahan. So how do you guys feel about those two numbers? If you see anything about a bump up if you fire your NFL coach?
Well, tell me what the bump. Tell me what you envision the bump being. Bump into a playoff spot?
Well, no. I mean, so you talk about Adam brought up the last year with if you fire Brunette, physically, there'd be a bump into a better record with the NHL teams, right? So,
yes.
I mean, would that give us two more games wins from three games to five games, or take us from three games to six games? I don't know. But I just, if there's a correlation like there is in hockey, I'm just curious.
Thank you for the call, Derek.
Thank you.
I don't know the answer to that.
I understand what he's saying.
So, yeah. That's good. These are good questions. This is what you have to decide.
Right. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if there is a coaching change bump in the NFL in the same way there is in the NHL. And what Derek was referring to is, I think it was 25 games into last season for the Predators, I advocated for the Predators to fire Andrew Brunette. And my rationale was that there is at least a decade's worth of data. You could probably go back further, but I chose a decade. There's a decade's worth of data that suggests that teams that fire their coaches, NHL teams, that fire their coaches in the regular season perform better following the firing. It was a noticeable bump in terms of winning percentage, points percentage, whatever. I don't know what that is in the NFL. I don't know how many mid-season NFL coach firings you often see. It's much more prevalent in the NHL. It's obviously a longer season in the NHL than the NFL. So that's a good question, Derek. I do not have an answer for that question.
I guess we're working on you mentioned the term lowest common denominator, and I don't think this is that.
But we're making an assumption that firing the coach mm-hmm. automatically is going to make things better. And I don't – we had this discussion when you we went through this last year with the Predators. And because I have issues. There's nuances with everything like that. I don't think that we can conclude, even though your numbers suggest that you do get a bump, I still don't buy it completely. And I think still that you should be of the mindset that you hope, you should want Brian Callahan to ride through the fire with Cam Ward. That's the position I took all along throughout the summer. And so I'm not going to change my mind after two games. We've done the numbers of quarterbacks. This is more about Cam Ward than it is Brian Callahan. And Cam Ward, everything is riding on him. And we have seen the history, and it is very blatant to me, even more suggestive, that when you shake up the head coach and you shake up the coordinators, and you know you have a bad roster. I don't think Vince Lombardi could do much better with this roster than Brian Callahan. I do not. And people, I would love to hear the counter argument to that, because I just think it's the roster. 90% of it is the roster. And so if you're then going to throw on top changing the terminology, all of these things that we have studied deeply, then I just don't think that the quick hook is the way to go.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. There is a groundswell of support, I guess you could say, for firing Brian Callahan. I get it, Titans fans. You're pissed. This team stinks. It has stunk for a while, predating Brian Callahan, but 3-16 under Brian Callahan. So I know a lot of you want someone's head to roll for how bad it's been over the past season plus two games. But what would firing Brian Callahan accomplish right now? 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Later today on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, the Nashville Sounds take on Louisville. First pitch is at 5:35. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. This Sunday, the NFL game of the week on 94.9 The Fan is the Cowboys versus the Bears at 3:25. NFL game of the week is presented by Circa Sportsbook Kentucky and Macero in 12 South. We were talking about the ACTs.
Who in the hell sings that song? When did it come out?
This guy named Tim Nance.
That is a.
And it was 8 years ago.
It came out. Wow.
That is to the tune of "I'll Make a Man Out of You" from the movie Mulan.
Okay.
But this song, the guy that's singing it, his name's Tim Nance, and he made it 8 years ago for ACT prep.
Oh, did it get a lot of action?
It had 3.1K views. Pretty good.
Well, it got more action now because they just
You're
welcome, Tim.
We just played it on the air. Okay. So we are talking Brian Callahan because I understand that social media and our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, it can be sort of an echo chamber. It's also not fully representative of the Titans fan base at large. There are a lot more Titans fans who do not engage on social media, who listen to our program, but they don't call, they don't text. So I understand that those of you who call, those of you who text, those of you who post on X, you represent a vocal portion of the Titans fan base. I don't know if I would call you a vocal minority, but you have to keep that in perspective as well. So it feels like a lot of you want the Titans to fire Brian Callahan right now. Two games is enough, plus the 17 from last season. Cut bait, see what you can do. But I want to know what that would accomplish right now other than to satisfy, to use the word I used earlier, your bloodlust. I want to know what it would satisfy. How would it help the Tennessee Titans to fire Brian Callahan right now? I'm not talking about at the end of the season. I'm talking about right now. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ron on our text line has an interesting text. He says, quote, if you had a kid that was going to a school where you feel he or she is not getting what your kid needs, how long do you leave your child at that school knowing he or she is not performing well and is falling behind before you move them to another class or teacher? That's how I feel about Cam Ward and Brian Callahan.
Why do we think Cam is not getting what he needs? If we're only talking about Cam, because what did you think his numbers would be and what the record of the team would be after two games? I look at some things that Cam has done, and I see optimism. He's turned the ball over one time. Mm-hmm. The shortcomings have to do with personnel, in my mind. But it's a great question. I love the question and how it's asked, and I was never in that position. I never switched schools, and I never switched any of my kids' schools. But it's a very good question, and I know a lot of people can apply to a practical situation in life.
Well, I mean, I can understand what the texter is saying. We switched our kids' school for reasons that, you know, were valid, but it is what it is. So I understand that part of not leaving your kid somewhere where you don't feel like they're getting fed or nurtured or taught the things that are beneficial to them. So do you leave them in there knowing that they're not making any progress mentally and emotionally, you know? Or do you say, you know what, I'm going to remove my kid. I'm going to put them somewhere where they can thrive as a student. So I understand the sort of the analogy, but I think they're the same but different in a sense. Learning, being in school is totally different from the situation that they're in now. Because I think the situation that they're in now, the information that has to be relayed to the quarterback and then there to the offense, that's a lot. And the head coach has to, there's a process that the team has to go to. You got to understand, they got a bunch of young guys. Last year wasn't great, and they had some older guys. What do you think, what did anybody think this year was going to look like with younger guys and sort of veterans that are prone to injury? What did people think the season was going to start off as? How do they think Callahan was going to coach or be able to coach? Because, again, I think you're only allowed to expand your offense if the talent dictates that. And right now, they don't have the talent. He's trying. Some things hit, some things didn't. But when I look at it outside of what happened the first game, I don't think he's done anything outside of that has told me as a player he's a bad coach or a bad play caller.
Let me ask you a question that I was thinking about today. And I preface this by saying I may be totally off base thinking this. Sometimes I legitimately wonder how much impact coaching truly has. For example, can an elite team, when I say elite team in the NFL, what team comes to mind first?
Kansas Baltimore. City Chiefs.
Okay.
Baltimore.
Let's use the Baltimore Ravens. Let's say you took Brian Callahan and plopped him on the Baltimore Ravens. Same roster. Isn't that team talented enough to overcome however you would describe Brian Callahan's coaching?
Well, that gets to me. Well, see, it comes back to me. The coach has something to do with how the team plays. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. But I believe that so much of what this team is dealing with right now is because of the roster shortcomings. And I will continue to present that, and I want to hear the counter argument. And some people have come up with some really good questions. But I still have not heard anything that's convinced me otherwise. Give anybody the offensive line that they have, the drafts that they had leading up to Brian Callahan taking the job, the receivers they have, the defense they have, the players. Mm-hmm. And what did you think, how much better do you think that they should be than they are right now? That is the issue. It's glaring to me. It's not the coaching.
It's a bit of both. I don't think one can live without the other. I think, if you are a elite play caller, you can't, get your team to the playoffs or you know, win inside the playoffs if you don't have the players. Vice versa, if you have the players but don't have the ability to call the plays the way that benefits your players and bring out their best, then, you know, it's not going to work. So it's not just a black and white answer. It can be both. If you took Brian Callahan, and because I've watched this team both, intently for different reasons, but if you took Brian Callahan and you put him in that offense, it wouldn't work. You know why? Because that offense they have was tailored for the offense that they're running now. It's totally different. Those two offenses, you watch them, they're totally different. So if I took Brian Callahan and put him over there, it wouldn't work. Why? Or it would take time, a whole season for them to really click in. Why? Because it's taught different. It's a different offense. Yeah, you got some players, but it doesn't fit the offense that you're running. So I got to adjust what I'm doing to my individuals that's out there playing.
My point was that, do you believe that elite talent can overcome average coaching?
Yes.
Okay.
To a degree.
It depends. It that's my answer. It depends because I've seen it. I've been a part of situations. So it's a bit of, if we wanted to just make it black and white, we can. I can do that.
Here's an example. Do you think Barry Switzer was a great NFL coach?
He was okay.
I don't think he was.
He was okay. He had the talent, right?
That's the thing.
Exactly. So he was handed the keys to basically a dynasty.
We can have the debate about the dynasty.
But Jimmy Johnson, what?
Jimmy Johnson built the team.
And he had the coaching expertise to coach those elite players.
But to me, that would be an example of Adam's point. A mediocre coach. Mm-hmm. Like, you could probably make the argument that a lot of coaches mm-hmm. could have taken over that Dallas team and won the Super Bowl with Deion Sanders and Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin and the great offensive line they had and Emmitt Smith in his prime. They had elite talent. So does that maybe prove your point, Adam? Does that make the point?
Perhaps. I just think that I know that this is a simplistic way mm-hmm. of thinking about it. I understand that. But we make this argument all the time. When a bad team in a certain sport mm-hmm. struggles, you find the most legendary coach in that sport. Let's use hockey, for example. Scotty Bowman couldn't coach that team to a championship. Something like that. You make that argument. Again, I am simplifying it. Mm-hmm. So that was the thought. That was my thought, that Brian Callahan has had plenty of missteps as Titans head coach. We can go back to week one. It wasn't that long ago. The play calling at the end of the first half when they were backed toward their end zone. The admission after the game that he didn't know the rule on the Elagaya Manor catch. I am not defending Brian Callahan on either of those fronts. My point is that I truly believe that you could find the best coach today in the NFL and put him in charge of this roster, and it would still stink.
I would agree. Let's build on the Cowboys thing again. And I am not a Cowboys fan. You might think I am, but I'm somewhat of an NFL historian. I looked this up. So Jimmy Johnson, considered a great coach, mm-hmm. right? Two-time Super Bowl winner. So let's go back to the caller's question earlier this hour. After 20 games, do you know what you need to know about a head coach? Jimmy Johnson's record to start his NFL coaching career was what?
He won two games?
2-18. Mm-hmm. He was 2-18. And so only a couple years later, as the roster got better, as Troy Aikman survived his rookie year and went 1-15 under Jimmy Johnson, and then they got Emmitt Smith. They started to get better. They made the Herschel Walker trade. They started getting some players. Once they got some players, mm-hmm. Jimmy Johnson looks like a pretty good coach. Mm-hmm. And so, to me, that's where they are. The Bengals, very similar situation and a connection to Brian Callahan. Zach Taylor, his first 2 years, 2-14, 4-11-1. Mm-hmm. By this token of, hey, we've seen enough of Zach Taylor. This is with, again, first overall pick quarterback, Joe Burrow.
They waited and they matured with him as they built the roster. They were in the Super Bowl the next year, and they've been a really good team since then. They've stumbled on hard times here the last season and a half. Burrow's been injured, all of that. But you can't write the coach off when you have a roster in the situation it is in when he takes over. Those are the examples I would use.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your thoughts on Brian Callahan. But coming up next, we'll put the Titans on hold for a moment, talk to Mitch Light of The Athletic to preview the upcoming weekend in college football. Mitch Light is coming up next at 615-737-1025. Speaking of college football, the MTSU Blue Raiders will host Marshall this Saturday at Floyd Stadium at 6 o'clock. Catch all of the action on Totally Hits 93.3 with coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at totallyhitsnashville.com. The Vanderbilt Commodores return to First Bank Stadium this Saturday to take on Georgia State. Pregame begins at 5 on 102.5 The Game with the kickoff at 6:30. Vanderbilt football is brought to you by Gary Forrest Acura, Jimmy Kelly Steakhouse, and Smoky Mountain Tops. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by our good friend Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, I have to ask you first, which proud football program season is more on life support as we enter week four? The Clemson Tigers or the Notre Dame Fighting Irish?
Oh, Clemson, by far. Notre Dame has lost to two very good teams. I think one legit national championship contender in Miami and another playoff caliber team by a total of 4 points. I think 4 points. Whereas Clemson is 1-2, did not look good in its one win over Troy. You can argue a good loss to LSU at home, but you know, when is anything for Clemson a good loss? And then Georgia Tech's a good team, but that's not a game Clemson loses if it's Clemson of old. So I don't think it's very close here.
Perhaps I was influenced by the fact that both my father-in-law and Pete Weber are huge Notre Dame Fighting Irish fans, and I've heard a lot about
a lot of disappointment.
The Irish's 0-2 start. So perhaps between
your North Carolina hatred and this Notre Dame, I'm just getting a lot of biases from Adam over the last couple of weeks.
Against Notre Dame. Absolutely okay. No bias. I'm just saying that there are people in my life who are big Irish fans, so perhaps that's why I thought what's been going on at Notre Dame is perhaps worse than it seems from afar. Let's talk Vanderbilt. As I just mentioned, Vanderbilt returns home against Georgia State, a team that defeated the Commodores last season, early in the season, a disappointing loss. After what you saw from the Commodores on Saturday in Columbia against South Carolina, I'm wondering what you think this team's ceiling is. Because we even had a conversation the other day about if you made the Tennessee Vanderbilt game that takes place near the end of the season, you put it this week, Vanderbilt at Tennessee, what would that line be? And I think we all said it would be within a touchdown.
Well,
right?
No. We got a pretty wide range, which is pretty interesting. You said 10 points.
Yeah, 10.5.
My bad.
And you said
I think 5.5.
I went in the middle, 7.5 to 8.5. I've had it all over the map, though. And I think Jonathan Hutton was closer to D-Mace, right?
No, he said 5. Like 5 points.
Oh, he did. He did go. He was more like Adam.
So, Mitch, why don't you answer two questions? Why don't you answer that hypothetical and then tell me how high you think Vanderbilt's ceiling is the rest of the season?
That's a good question. I think any point spread that's kind of high would be just a compliment to Tennessee, because Vanderbilt's clearly getting the respect from the gamblers. You know, last week the line kept coming down. I believe it was 2.5
to
kickoff. So I think the boys in Vegas realize that this is a good Vanderbilt team. I would say 7.5, and again, that's just a compliment to Tennessee. I don't think it would be under a touchdown. I just think because what Tennessee has done offensively, and you know, I'm sure we'll get into them in a little bit. So that's an interesting question. And what is its ceiling? You look at the schedule and how many, you know, what I call them, like in the old days, sure death experiences. You're going down. There's just no way you're going to win that game. I don't think there's any of those on the schedule. Which before the season, you might say, oh, you're going to Alabama, you're going to Texas, you're going to Tennessee. So I think Vanderbilt can win every game on its schedule. I don't know how someone who's watched this team in the first 3 weeks can't make that statement. Will they? No, they're not going to. No, very few teams do. So it just depends on the health, and we'll find out more. I mean, how real was this start? You don't win two games like that against Power Four teams on the road and not be a good team, but everything's relative. You know, Virginia Tech has struggled since. I think South Carolina is a better team than they showed the other day. So I think the ceiling is 9 or 10 wins. Do I think they're going to get there? Probably not. But from what they've showed so far, that seems rational at least.
Now, Mitch, let's go back to what Adam asked about Notre Dame and Clemson, because one, Notre Dame's outside of a conference. I know Clemson is in a conference, but those were teams that were looked at as, you know, sort of chalked them in as playoff, you know, teams that will get in the playoffs. But those two teams have started off 0-2. My question is, which division or which conference does that help more? Does it help the Big Ten or does it help the SEC? And in particular, a team like Vanderbilt, whose last six of their last seven games are against ranked opponents. So just looking at that, you would assume, yeah, they have a winning record, but what will that winning record be? And if Clemson and Notre Dame continues to, if they don't have the season, say if they lose one more game, each one of them, does it help a team like Vanderbilt in their case? Say if they come down to 8-3 or, you know, something like that toward the end of the season, does it help them more or does it help the Big Ten?
Well, that's a good question. It's a good point about Notre Dame. I think the Notre Dame part of it's bigger because I think if Notre Dame plays its way out of the playoff, like if they lose another game, I still think they could possibly get in at 10-2, depending on what USC does, depending on what Arkansas does. But 9-3 without any great wins, so that opens up in theory another spot. And I think it would help an SEC team or a Big Ten team. It's just so early right now to look at teams, but a 9-3 SEC team is surely going to have a better, most likely going to have a better resume than a 9-3 Notre Dame team. Clemson, it could be just a matter of another ACC team taking that spot. Last year, we saw two ACC teams make it. I think Miami's looking very good, obviously. We don't know yet about Florida State. We think they're improved. Could Georgia Tech be a team like Vanderbilt, kind of come out of nowhere to fight for a spot? But that Notre Dame piece is interesting because, in theory, that just takes the team out of the equation.
Mitch Light is with us. So, Mitch, you just touched on where does South Carolina go from here. That will be interesting to watch as they move forward. The last I read was Lenora Sellers is questionable for the game at Missouri.
I think it's been upgraded a little bit. Might just be false hope, but last I saw some tweets earlier from some of the quote-unquote insiders that they trending towards playing.
So it was interesting that South Carolina gets beat by Vanderbilt and goes from number 11 to out of the top 25. And now they go to Missouri, and they are a 9.5-point dog. I don't know how what the factoring in of Sellers' condition specifically is on that, but how do you look at that matchup? Because Missouri is also a future opponent for Vanderbilt.
Yeah, Missouri, I mean, South Carolina is interesting. Their schedule, they play the two most, I guess, overachieving teams in the SEC early in the season. Missouri has been very, very good. Now, they haven't left home. They've only played one, quote-unquote, real team in Kansas, and they rallied to win that game. But they really controlled, from a yardage standpoint, they were the better team there. Louisiana is not completely awful, and they beat them 52-10. You know, Bo Perbula has been a revelation at quarterback, and it's not really with his legs. It's with throwing the ball. So they're skilled. They've got a really good transfer running back and Ahmad Hardy from Louisiana Monroe. So I think they are really good. And that line, I would think, reflected Sellers when it came out earlier in the week, reflected Sellers. Maybe it'll go down a point or two. But I'm interested to see, like you said, how South Carolina bounces back. Was that a one-game aberration? If they, you know, will they be controlled on the line of scrimmage like they were, which probably has to be the most disappointing part for Shane Beamer, just the lack of physicality there. But this is always the Battle of Columbia. These teams play every year. It's always kind of a barometer game for both programs.
I watched the Georgia State Vanderbilt game last year. It was a very interesting one, to say the least. Vanderbilt did not play well. Then all of a sudden, they looked like they were going to go back and steal the game, and they were one play away from winning it. And Georgia State made a great play for the winning touchdown.
Yep.
I realized teams turn over the roster a lot these days, needless to say. What does this year's Georgia State team look like compared to last year's?
How good are they? About the same. You know, they lost to Ole Miss 63-7. They lost to Memphis 38-16 at home. They beat
a bad Murray State team, 37-21. So they've got a lot of P4 transfers, a lot of guys transfer down. What they do have, and that receiver who made that catch, which, you know, it was a big time catch and he was well covered. He's back, Ted Hurst. Mm-hmm. He's averaging 16 yards of reception. He's by far their best player. He's a guy that had offers to go elsewhere, and I think with what little NIL money they have at Georgia State, they were able to keep him. So he will obviously be a focus. And I think from a Vanderbilt standpoint, the best thing to happen to this team is the fact they lost to Georgia State last year. So I think they will have there won't be any overlooking this team. I wouldn't think Clark Lee will have his guys ready to play. But this is from the skill position, they've got some guys that can hurt Vanderbilt. They picked up some, they've been able to run the ball a little bit there. So Vanderbilt favored by 27, I think, for a reason. Obviously they'll need to play well to win the game.
I'm looking at a lot of teams. Auburn goes to Oklahoma. You mentioned potential playoff team when you were just mentioning Texas A&M. I see Ole Miss is taking care of business so far. Tennessee, we've talked about being a playoff contender even after losing that game against Georgia. But the theme is, to me, you've got so many teams in the SEC that probably, if everything falls right, could make a playoff spot. There's not enough room, though, for all of them to make it. So I think the stage is set for a pretty interesting ride here.
Yeah, it's not like college basketball where we had, 14 teams make the NCAA tournament? And I agree with you. I mean, is there a bad team in the SEC this year? Mississippi State was the universally picked 16th, and they beat Arizona State and have a nice convincing win in a rivalry game at Southern Miss. Kentucky has had its issues, but they made Ole Miss sweat at home. So there's no, so it's such a cliche. There's no free weekends. I don't know if the league is super elite at the top. I mean, obviously the best teams in the SEC are among the best teams in the country, but I don't think we found a team that's like a surefire. If you're going to do your power rankings, some people have LSU number one in the country, number two in the country. And then you hear some people say, I don't like this team. I don't think they're going to make the playoff. So I think that adds more intrigue that the bottom is better than it's been and the top might not be as good. So should make it for a fun ride, like you said.
No question about it.
Mitch Light of The Athletic has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, as he is every Thursday to help us preview the weekend in college football. Great stuff as always, Mitch. We'll chat next week.
All right, take care, guys. See ya.
615-737-1025. We will get back into your thoughts on Brian Callahan because you guys are bloodlusty. I don't know if that's even a word, but I'm going to use it. You're bloodlusty.
And would that make them possibly a vampire? Vampires?
Yeah, bloodlusty.
If you're bloodlusty?
Yeah, they have to be.
By definition, I think.
Unless
so.
You are a lichen, you have vampire
and people have.
All
bloodlusty vampires, maybe not. What is the math thing where A equals B, but B doesn't equal A?
You think
it's a Venn diagram.
Big ass glasses.
I'm trying to get the bell rung, but I'm not succeeding.
Exactly.
You need to keep a tally. Need to keep a tally of bell rings.
We got a quota here, okay?
I may look smart, but when it comes to math, I am very dumb, okay? I had to repeat 11.
There's something I remember vaguely from a math class. A equals B, but B doesn't always equal A is something.
I had to repeat 11th grade math my freshman year in college. Okay. So
I need to call Kevin Anglin, math teacher at MBA / outstanding basketball coach, and see if I can figure out that theory.
Nevertheless, we will get back to your thoughts on Brian Callahan coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game.